This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in today for Mark Haney. Howard Wilkinson is with me today, too. Cincinnati Councilmember Kevin Flynn was elected in 2013 and decided not to seek re-election this year. He had sought a council seat several times before being elected in 2013. Councilmember Flynn joins us to talk about his time at City Hall and what's next. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Councilmember Flynn, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You have some big shoes to fill after what we just listened to.
That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. I never try to chop top Charlie. That's, or should I call you Jake instead of Jay?
So I know at least in 2009, and I think you ran in 2011, because I remember, I think your time, it was Kevin in 11 was your theme to get elected to council. And you finally won in 2013.
Yes.
And served 4 years. So what influenced your decision that 1 4-year term was enough? Why did you decide not to seek another term?
A lot of things. I was very happy with my 4 years on council. I think we did a lot of good things in this 4 years. The law of diminishing returns comes into mind, that the big things that I wanted to do, structurally balancing the budget, re-emphasizing basic services, police, fire, roads, and increasing transparency, calling for performance-based measures, they've all been done. And I kind of wanted to serve as an example that people can get into city government, run for city hall, accomplish what they want to do, and then step back to their private lives. They don't have to make a career out of it.
You know, Kevin, that's classic charter committee philosophy, really. You're the only so-called pure charterite on city council, that, you know, you ran with a charter endorsement. That's what they've believed for many years. You know, you come on, you do the job, and then you go back to being who you were before.
Right.
But you worked very hard to get there. And is it hard at all to give it up?
I'm sure there'll be regrets, Howard. Right.
Because there's always some unfinished business that
we've been joking that this past month has been the month of Flynn, because I've been getting ordinances passed on a weekly basis,
right,
in the rush to get things done before I leave council. But yeah, there are things that I would still like to do, and I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Cincinnatian. I'm a lifelong Cincinnatian. I'm going to continue to stay involved, and I think that's one of the things. I will continue to have a voice. I said the same things for 4 years. People didn't believe me when I would say things. Once I announced I wasn't running for re-election, people started believing me. And
although you did little things to antagonize people, like, oh, there's still time to get petitions, or you and I even joked that on the filing deadline, I said you should pull up in the Board of Elections parking lot at 3:45.
I was going to take a picture. You know, I even did a couple of Twitter hashtags, write in Flynn. Yeah, you know.
There's nothing wrong with making these people crazy sometimes. You know. But, you know, you also said, after that filing deadline, that you were not going to leave early,
right,
which is what happens in many cases of people who decide they're not running for reelection or term limited out, which you were not, that you were going to serve out your full term. What was that decision based on?
Well, that was never a decision. I mean, there were some people that I liked a lot,
mm-hmm,
that I felt could have taken my seat and done justice to my seat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much good it does to that person to be appointed. I mean, history hasn't been kind to many of those people that have been appointed.
Were these people who actually ended up running?
One yes and one no. One was Henry Frondorf, who I think he has that true charter spirit that you were just mentioning.
Right. Yeah.
That there's not a political agenda, that it's about transparency, that it's about good government. The other person, and hope he doesn't mind me mentioning his name, Luke Bocher.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Luke, super, super smart guy, knows the ins and outs of, in fact, he was embedded with the Economic Development Department, so he knows, he wrote most of the economic development deals that we did over the last 4 years, would be invaluable on council.
Yeah, but now he's got something else to do.
Yeah.
Apparently, yes.
And Howard's referring to that right now. He's interim manager of Richard Cordray's campaign for Ohio governor.
Yeah, right? I just heard that a couple of days ago.
I don't want to get sidetracked in this, but it's a question that I do need to ask, because I saw it at least once on social media and a couple other places that, well, Councilmember Flynn's not running for re-election because he doesn't want to face the backlash of changing his vote on the streetcar. And I want you to talk about that, because I think a lot of people look over when you said during the campaign in 2013 you were not necessarily for the streetcar project. It wasn't under construction. And when you took office, things had substantially changed from when you were campaigning for city council.
I mean, and I'll be honest, Jay, I said I was against the construction of the streetcar during the 2013 campaign. But, you know, I mean, there were a number of people that were reelected, including the number one and number two vote getters, that also changed their mind afterwards because circumstances change. And I think when we had a meeting in May of 2013, John Dietrich, the streetcar czar, had said, we're about $20 million into this project. If we canceled it today, it would cost $20 million. In December of 2013, we had an independent KPMG, well-respected auditor come in and said the cost to cancel could be as much as $80 million. It's at least 50-some million dollars. And that's, you'd also have to give back the $45 million that the feds had given us. So if you take the high end of it, it was $80 million. Plus 45, that's 125. At the time, the estimate was $133 million to complete construction of the streetcar. We could be out $80 million and have nothing, or we could spend an extra $8 and have a completed streetcar. To me, it seemed rational and logical to complete the streetcar. But one of the problems was we did it wrong. We didn't have an operating plan before we started construction. And so one of the things that I did obtain was I got $9 million worth of guarantees for the operations of the streetcar that, thank goodness I got them, because we're calling on those guarantees. We called on them the first year. We expect to call on them the second year.
And that's the money from the Hale Foundation.
And I believe there were others that contributed to that, but they chose to donate to the Hale Foundation, and then Hale was the one that guaranteed. And I was happy to get that the night before that vote. We were working on, you know, the guarantee, and whenever you're taking a guarantee from someone as a lawyer, you know, it's like, well, if they don't have anything, they're always willing to give you the guarantee. The Hale Foundation has lots of money behind the guarantee, so I was very happy to take it from them.
Out of the streetcar comes another acronym that you're responsible for, and it's called VTICA. And as simply as you can, VTICA started to benefit streetcar operation, but it's now been expanded to some neighborhood projects and, I believe, affordable housing.
Yes.
So as simple as you can and as brief as you can, explain Vtica and why it's good.
Well, let's start out with the streetcar proposal. Most of the benefit, if you read the economic analyses of the streetcar project, it was never about transportation. It was never about being self-sufficient. It was about creating in areas where there hadn't been development in many years, development. And I think we've seen that happen. I mean, you can't buy a piece of real estate along the streetcar route for any kind of reasonable amount of money now. But there was no process in place to utilize that wealth that was created from the streetcar as part of that. So Vtica was created, and the mayor jumped in and helped with this. You know, everybody wants to give me the credit or the blame for creating Vtica. The brilliance of our mayor was he said, I oppose the streetcar, but now we've got it. We've got to figure out how to make it work. And what it does is it takes a portion of the tax benefits that that new construction gets, and it puts it towards streetcar operations.
And these are voluntary. And Vtica is actually V-T-I-C-A?
Yes, voluntary tax incentive contribution amounts.
And I believe these, it's like, is it 15%?
15% is the total amount. It started out at 7.5%. People were saying, oh, that's going to stymie development, and we only saw more development happening. So it was raised to 15%. And once there's a delay, I know you're in real estate, Jay, so you understand this, but there's a delay in the time that these contributions will really kick in. But eventually, they will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $3 to $4 million a year. And then the vice mayor and I said, everybody's talking about in this past council campaign, affordable housing. And we need an affordable housing trust fund. And this is what we need to do. And it was like, great, but how do you pay for it? We can barely balance our budget as it is. We don't have tens of millions of dollars to just divert to an affordable housing trust fund. As much as we might all like the idea of providing decent, affordable housing to people in the city. So the mayor, the vice mayor and I came up with this plan to expand the Vtica to all of the neighborhoods so that when development occurs in the neighborhoods, a portion of those tax benefits would go into the create this trust fund. The mayor got involved with us and said, we also need to do something for the neighborhoods. You know, the neighborhoods are suffering, and some neighborhoods are doing very well. A lot of neighborhoods are not. And so let's take this concept of the Vtica and we'll split it. Half will go to the neighborhood in which the development occurs. Half will go into this affordable housing trust fund.
And part of that doesn't you have to have some approval from the state legislature?
No, because these are voluntary payments. I mean, they're voluntary in the sense that if you want to do something all on your own and pay 100% of the real estate tax liability that you have and not get a benefit from the city, there's no way that the city can say you have to pay 15% into this fund. It only works when you're getting something from the city. But that's
voluntary.
It's virtually every project that happens in the city.
Yeah.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking with outgoing council member Kevin Flynn, who will be a council member until January the 2nd at 11 a.m.
That's it. Yes, we changed the countdown clock to 11 a.m.
And you do. I think you do have a countdown clock on your iPad that anytime that I want to know how many days are left in the term, I can ask Mr. Flynn. He can give me days, hours, and seconds.
I did the same thing for baseball spring training.
You impress me as if somebody of all the council members that I've covered, particularly on this term, if you got a 630-page budget document, if you got a 900-page budget and finance agenda, I get the sense that you probably reviewed, maybe not word for word, but maybe you did, but I got the sense that you personally probably went through that entire document, because I could tell by the questions you ask during committee meetings. Most things will, you know, move passage and Mr. Flynn's turning up, Mr. Chairman, I have a question. And you did that a lot. And I got that sense that you probably were going through every page of every document, reviewing it for yourself instead of having a staffer do it for you.
I did. It's not that I didn't trust someone else to do it, but if I'm the one that's voting on it, there's nuances to these documents sometimes that I can't count on somebody else to do it. You know, people have said this for years in my law practice, that one of my biggest shortcomings is I don't delegate well. And I recognize that. But I like that policy-driven stuff. So in the later years of the term, when I saw that it was a development agreement, I wouldn't necessarily read every page of the development agreement because I had read it and I knew that it was the same document. But I would look for key provisions in it. And for example, even last week, we approved a development deal that still had a footnote in it that said, we're going to change this language in the development agreement relative to minority and small business hiring based on recent legislation passed by city council. Well, that was the council legislation resulting from the Croson study that passed back in 2015. Now, I know we've executed probably 100 development deals since then. That footnote was still in there last week. So I said, please, before I leave council,
fix this.
Take the footnote out, because you're not going to change the language.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that earlier in your term, you basically created the charter reform task force, you know, to go line by line through the city charter and try to make changes, anachronisms, you know, get rid of things that just didn't apply anymore or just didn't make any sense. But there wasn't a whole lot that came out of it in terms of stuff that could be put on the ballot for voters to look at. Were you disappointed at all in the product that,
well,
that task force?
It's a good question. I mean, I would like the charter to undergo a periodic review, as most other charters do, including our state constitution undergoes a review every 10 years. I think that would be a good thing. My purpose in the Charter Reform Task Force was not to make substantive changes, because I think that should come probably from either a glaring need or from the desire of the electorate. I don't think six members of council should necessarily be making a decision on these things just for the sake of making the decision. So much of what I wanted to get done was, you know, taking the University of Cincinnati chapter out of the charter.
Right.
You know, many of your listeners may not even know the University of Cincinnati used to be a city-owned university.
Yeah. And still, is the land still city-owned?
I think the land is still city-owned, but it's under a...
And General Hospital, which is now a University Hospital Medical Center, used to be a city-owned hospital.
All right.
UC Medical Center. It's not even University. It was University Hospital for a while, and then it went to UC Medical Center.
But you think these major changes should be by petition initiative or that sort of thing?
I think, or if there is something that comes up where council says we need to make this change in the charter. But, you know, there were some changes that didn't get made to really refine what it meant when we went to the stronger mayor form of government that were proposed that just couldn't garner six votes. And there was, for example, executive session. State law allows executive session in very limited circumstances. When you're talking about litigation, when you're talking about labor issues.
Buying property.
There was a case that the Enquirer brought years ago that says, the city charter says, all meetings of council shall be in the public, so therefore there is no executive session for city council. That means we don't get to have any discussion concerning the city manager's salary or any of these other things. That would have been a common sense change to the charter that I thought should have been made. We actually had six votes to put that on the ballot, and then a member changed their mind. And so when it was vetoed by the mayor, it came back. We only had five votes. You need six. It never got on. There were other things about the so-called pocket veto that Vice Mayor Mann and I both think doesn't really exist in the charter. It's mm-hmm. simply a power that has been identified by this mayor and a prior mayor to exist. Now, this mayor has always put things eventually on the calendar. There's no power in the charter for the mayor to hold things off the agenda.
We've got a couple things to get to before we run out of time here, but I don't want to – on the charter reform, does there still need to be some tweaking, tinkering with the election system?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that there should always – I think we should always look back at it. We moved, for example, the mayoral primary from September to May. That was one of the charter changes we made. How's that work out? We still didn't have very many people show up for that.
Does there even need to be a primary?
I remember one of the early mayoral elections when it was a stronger mayor, and there were three really strong candidates, and I don't think you want your mayor elected with a plurality, and that's what you could have easily had. So I think that it's nice to have a head-to-head race. It helps define the issues. As you guys know, in a council race, it's very much name recognition and a beauty contest because those that, especially with four-year terms, those that have that name recognition and get that free media, it's very hard to dislodge them.
Should those four-year terms be staggered?
I think absolutely they should be staggered. I said I didn't see anything wrong with two-year terms. Now that I've served in office for 4 years, I can see where people would be campaigning too much if it was every 2 years. I know that we don't have much time, so I know Jay's got another question.
I want to give you 30 seconds. You said that this was the month of Flynn ordinances, and most of those deal with accessibility. Talk about that.
Well, you know, I didn't come into council to be the wheelchair candidate. I think Howard, when you were still writing for the Enquirer, said it's easy to see Flynn when you're in this room of 20-some candidates. He's the one in the wheelchair. And I wanted to be a council member for all of Cincinnati who happened to be in a wheelchair. And I think I've done that. But one of the things that I've recognized is we are behind the curve relative to accessibility issues. So we have now passed legislation that will allow ramps in our right of way, just as we allow smoking lounges in our right of way. And we're working on accessible taxicab legislation.
Outgoing Cincinnati Council Member Kevin Flynn, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a great 4 years. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And earlier we heard from Council Member Charlie Winburn, who's also leaving City Hall because of term limits.